Welcome to the Open Line, your window to the stories behind the stories, inside the news through discussion and discovery on 560 CFOS.
Good morning and welcome to the Open Line. Claire McCormack still with you, and in studio with me today are Nick Oldreeve and Matt Knopper. Now, they have been on before. They are looking for the remains of Lisa Moss, who a name that a lot of people recognize in this area, as well as a number of other people who have gone missing in the past, and they have some new developments to share with us today. And of course, if you have questions or comments for Nick or Matt, give us a call, the number 519-376-7777, or you can call toll free at 1-800-265-3757. You are listening to The Open Line on AM 560 CFOS.
The story behind the story. Back to The Open Line on 560 CFOS.
I'm Claire McCormack. You're listening to The Open Line. In studio with me this morning are Matthew Knopper and Nick Oldreeve. And they have a website called Please Bring Me Home, where you can submit tips having to do with cold cases of people who have gone missing in the past. So they are in studio today. There is a new development, I guess we could say, in their work they're going to tell us about. So welcome, Matt and Nick.
Thanks.
Morning.
So that's the first thing we'll do, is we'll talk about this new development, and this has to do with Lisa Moss.
Yes. Last time we were in with you, we were discussing excavating a property in Owentown for Lisa, and that was a property owned by Barry Crusselbrink. He donated his time to make sure we could do that, and his machinery, and we disproved that property fully, we believe, and that's something that Barry's happy about. Nobody has to wonder, is she really on that property? There's no way she is on that property. So since then, we have kind of gone through our tips from front to back again, gotten new tips in and had new conversations, and we're led now to a property in Annan. And there is a correlation with that property in Annan to the property we were looking at in Owentown.
It's important to note, too, that we did an excavation at this property last July, so it's a property we've been familiar with for over a year. And we've over the past few months, we've gotten some information that's pulling us back there.
So now, when we were talking about when you guys were last in, that was May. So you were looking in Annan last July? Yeah. Okay.
For the most part, I'd say Annan has been our sole area to look at for Lisa. Owentown was one that we just knew we had to disprove, and we had to put all the effort into disproving that property because we believe if she wasn't on that property in Owentown, then she is not in Owentown. Therefore, she must be in Annan, which is the only other location we're curious about.
So that's interesting. And I mean, I've talked to you before about this. When you say disprove, tell us a little bit about that and how that works.
Well, it's difficult to completely disprove, the police did a great job at excavating that property in 2010, 2011. And then we just took it from there, excavated areas at the property that we believe they hadn't touched, and we actually went deeper. And actually we found articles which the police hadn't touched because they'd been unmoved for 30 years. So we believe, unless we hear new information, it's difficult to prove a negative, to disprove a negative, right? You always try and prove a positive. You try and prove someone's there, not someone's not there. So it's difficult to prove a negative. But unless we find new information, I would say, she's not there.
Right. And so that's, that's kind of interesting. You said there it's difficult to prove
a negative.
But that's basically what you're doing. You're ruling things out.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's part of it, right? That's at least like you said, Nick, now you know that she's not there.
Yeah, we try and throw everything we can at any area. We don't just want to half do it. We want to fully do it. And if that means, like Matt said, digging deeper, digging every area on that lot that we possibly can to ensure that she's not there, then that's what we'll do. And that's why we're returning back to this property in Annan.
So let's talk about this. This is something that's going on next week, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, September 5th, 6th, and 7th. We're going back. We have forensic anthropologists coming from Toronto. We have ground-penetrating radar coming from Milton. We have a search and rescue cadaver dog coming from Kitchener from Advanced Tactical Training Search and Rescue. Bill Bolton, he was actually the individual there with me when we located Terry Shope and in Georgian Bay, and he's been a great resource for us. And yeah, we're and Barry Krustelbrink is also going to be donating his time and his machinery to be digging up all these areas with us for the 3 days.
So that sounds like a pretty serious operation you've got going there.
Yeah, it's like we, like I said, we want to throw everything at this that we possibly can, and this is just one of those things. It, people might think that's a little bit overkill, but at this point, when it's 30 years later, I want to make sure we have the proper experts there. We're going to be there to kind of show them this is why we want to look here, this is where we want to look, but they're the experts. The forensic experts, the excavators, the cadaver dog, the ground penetrating radar. So
let's talk about this radar. I didn't know there was such a thing. How does that work?
It's new to me as well. I'll try and explain it the best I can. It's basically kind of like an X-ray that can look through the ground. However, it doesn't show you images. It shows you like blips, kind of like a heartbeat on a monitor. So if it pings off something, then there's a screen. It's kind of a tablet on it, and it's like a push lawnmower. And on the tablet, it'll show you what you're going over. And if it is something large or small and how deep it is, then it'll ping like a heartbeat. And then you just move that machine over a little bit. And then if the ping is smaller, you can start to figure out what shape that is. Typically, Bill Bolton from Advanced Tactical from Kitchener would bring that machine with him. However, we're actually bringing the people from Sensors and Software, is it called, in Milton. And they're coming up on Thursday with the ground penetrating radar. So that way they can tell us in real time, this is what I believe we're looking at.
Yeah, it kind of works like a fish finder. So it'll identify things which are, you know, 5 feet deep, 4 feet deep, which and it'll give some kind of shape and size to. So we'll know, is it a rock or is it something that's, you know, 3 feet, 4 feet long and... Yeah.
So will it identify any object? I mean, I imagine there are all kinds of things. So that could take some time.
Yeah, and that could be challenging if it's an area that has a lot of fill and has a lot of items. Then it can get very busy and confusing. So hopefully it's an area that's clean, that's just topsoil. And then if there was like a large rock, that would really stand out. But if it's an area where there's lots of things under that ground, it could be tough.
And that's why we want the expert to come back, or to come down on Thursday. It's going to be the first time that the actual individual that knows how to read this stuff is going to be able to tell us in real time. We don't have to send it off and wait.
Mm-hmm. So.
Right, and these are the people from Milton.
Yes.
Sensors and Software.
Yeah.
So is this something that people are using in investigations like this, or do they use it for something else normally?
Well, they actually use this. The OPP used this in 2010 when they excavated the Owenstown lot. So they use that to identify areas of interest to dig. Yeah.
So that's been around for a little while, then.
A long time, yeah.
Now, you've got all these people coming, and you guys have basically 3 days. Why three? Is it going to take that long, or how does that work?
This is likely the most massive property that we have searched in any of the cases. It is a huge lot, and, I mean, there's so many areas. Matt has worked really hard on a document where we've gone through every tip, every conversation, and there's over 50 points, I think.
Yeah, almost 50.
Almost 50 points that match to this property, and you got four hidden wells. You have... foundations that were completed around the time when Lisa went missing.
Cement pads.
You have ponds, you have moats, you have little streams throughout the property. There's a big bush that's unmaintained at the back of the lot. It is just a massive property, so it's going to take everyone. You'd think that 3 days we can take our time, but we're really going to still have to move pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So here's something, now I don't know, I would imagine you'd be reluctant to say exactly where this is. But is there any, I guess, worry that if people find out where this is, and if someone knows where she is, that they might try to get there first?
They're unable to get there. It's, how can I say this? It's, well, I believe that some of the people who may know where Lisa is know exactly where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
We've spoken with the people who currently own that land and currently live on that land, and... there's just no easy way for anybody to access that area. It's going to be difficult for us to find her. Even if these individuals know where she is, it's going to be difficult for them to go in and retrieve her if that's what they want to do without being seen. It's going to be impossible.
Yeah, for sure.
So there are, now you mentioned wells. So is this the same place where you were looking at another well last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, last summer we dug up one of the wells on the property. We thought it was the only one. So that's why we're going back, because we found three more. We buried in that well to make it safe. But it's still there. So we want to re-dig that up again, because we had a cadaver dog there last summer that was interested in it, but we couldn't find anything. And then,
Go ahead.
Yeah, so yeah, and as Nick said, at that time, we only thought there was one well on that property. So, and we had no other information coming in. At that time, we had very little information coming in about that property. I think we'd heard one thing, which was very vague, and that was after we'd discovered the well. So we kind of discovered this property on our own, and it is directly linked to the Owen Sound property that the police dug up in 2010. So there's a direct correlation between the property in Owen Sound, the police dug up, and this one.
So that seems like maybe somehow that would be promising then, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's no guarantees. I mean, the police have done a great job over 30 years. Well, they've worked hard, and I mean, there's no guarantees we'll locate her, but we're going to do everything we can. The OPP worked very hard, tirelessly, multiple detectives over 30 years. They had a cold case crime squad from London that came up and were looking in, and they actually initiated the dig in Owen Sound. So we're kind of building off what they've done, and we're hopeful, but there's never any guarantees.
So this is a good time to just for, you know, if there are people listening who don't know who you guys are or what you do. So police have been looking for Lisa Moss, for example, for 30 years. There are a few other cases that have been going on forever. What made you guys get into this and do this in the first place?
I just put an ad in the paper because I was hoping that maybe people would bring information to police back in 2016. And it was never going to kind of end up like this. And then me and a couple friends decided to look into it. Locating missing people and just trying to help people has always been just an underlying passion of mine that I've always tried to do. And at the time where I was thinking to throw in the towel for finding Lisa because I just couldn't do it anymore, that's when Matt showed up and he kind of pushed me back into it and really helped me out and became a full, you know, front force to help do this. And just kind of a breath of fresh air to have a partner that you can be a sounding board about the case. So,
yeah, and so this was something, from what I remember, that you worked in a little bit before with kids who went missing?
Yeah, current runaway youth from Peterborough. And then when I came back to Owen Sound, if I heard about a current youth that ran away, I would try and go out and find them, and I often did. And I just stumbled upon Lisa Moss's case accidentally, never heard about it, was shocked that nobody was doing anything about it. It wasn't a knock on the police at all. I know that they have other stuff, like, without sounding too cliche, bigger fish to fry. I understand that the resources might not be there, so we're trying to be that resource that can maybe give them a head start to look somewhere. If we can go disprove these areas, then that's something they don't have to do, and they can do what they have to do to presently keep the public safe and do what they do.
Right, because there has not been any arrest or conviction for if she had indeed been murdered whoever's involved.
There is a main suspect. In 97, the police said they have a sole suspect. So, and I would... Nick and I have talked about this many times. I cannot find anywhere where, say, for example... at the place she was at that night, at that Woodford party, there was lots of alcohol, like there are at parties, right? There's lots of alcohol. There might be drugs. If this was, in fact, say, an overdose, I cannot find any other overdose where someone went to the lengths to hide a person for 30 years. So that leads me to believe it's probably a murder. And the police have said for quite a while that they believe it, it's possibly a murder too. So, yeah.
So we should take, and I have so many questions I've been writing down while you guys are talking to me here, but we should take a break. And of course, if any of our listeners would like to share something or ask a question, give us a call, 519-376-7777, or you can call toll free at 1-800-265-3757. We'll be right back with more Open Line on AM 560 CFOS.
The story behind the story. Back to the Open Line on 560 CFOS.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Open Line. I'm Claire McCormack, and in studio with me are Nick Oldreeve and Matthew Knopper. They are working together to look for the remains of Lisa Moss. She went missing roughly 30 years ago and has not been found. And so this coming week, September 5th, 6th, and 7th, they will be searching a property in Annan and bringing in a bunch of experts in this search and really kind of ramping this up because, I guess, you know, you have reason to believe that you might be successful here.
Yeah, it boils down to this is the property we believe she could be at, but we don't like to get tunnel vision. We're always working other areas with Lisa's case and all the cases. So even if she is not found here, we already have two other properties that we want to be looking at. So, yes, we believe she is here. However, we're ready to move on to the next one if she's not.
In terms of, so you guys, you get tips from just, you know, people in the area, from the public. You have a website where people can leave tips. Have people send things in the mail? Do you get phone calls? How are you getting these things?
Mostly through the website. However, some people will send us like Facebook messages or recognize me and Matt and pull us aside and want to talk to us. They'll try to track down my number and give me a call sometimes. We have a P.O. box. But for the most part, people trust the website because, and the reality is, if it didn't work, if the website didn't work and we weren't saying, you know, we're going to keep your information confidential, we're going to keep your name confidential, whatever, then people would know about that now. And we've been doing this now for 2 years, and I hope that people trust this process. We really are only out there to find Lisa. We're not out to get anybody.
Right. I mean, that wouldn't be, I guess, part of your role.
Yeah.
No.
Just find her.
So now if people want to, you know, if they're listening to this today and they're thinking about it and they would like to leave a tip, is it pleasebringmehome.com?
Correct.
And this P.O. box, I don't know if at some point you want to, if you have that memorized, or if you want to look that up in the meantime.
Nick might.
It's P.O. box 74, and it's N4K5P1, and it's Owen Sound.
Owen Sound. All right.
And people can write letters to us if they want. It comes directly to us. We're going to be actually throwing out questionnaires in envelopes that are already pre-stamped and addressed in certain businesses. We're working on that next. We have businesses that are willing to accept that. So we'd leave essentially 50 envelopes at a business. It'll have a questionnaire in it. Anyone can pick them up, fill out the questionnaire, throw it back in the envelope, throw it in a P.O. box. You don't have to get a stamp. You don't have to write your address on it, the address that you want to send it to. It's so easy. We're trying to make it as simple as we can for people.
So it seems like collecting information from people who maybe were at that party or knew something about Lisa Moss's life, that you're getting a lot of responses and that this information is really key. I mean, if you're still looking for more tips.
No, yeah, we're always looking. We're the day we stop looking for information for any of these cases is the day that they're found. We're not... That's what I mean. We are focused on this property in Annan. However, we're still not stopping looking because we could be wrong. We've been wrong before. Plenty of times.
Many times.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess you say that, but in looking at some of these sites, they were somehow connected. So I don't know if you were completely off the mark in the ones that you've actually gone in and looked at before when you were at this site again. If it is, in fact, the site, you're right, it may not be the site. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you might be in the right neighborhood anyway. Let's talk about some of the things that you're using. Now, I don't really know. You mentioned, so you've got ground radar, which we talked about at the beginning of the show. You've got forensic investigators coming. So what will they be doing? Cataloging things that you find?
Yeah, so they're coming from the University of Toronto. And they'll be in any area that we do excavate, they'll be in charge of that excavation. They'll be in control of it, and they will, we'll be sifting through any material, looking for any bone. That's the primary thing. We'll be looking for bone, maybe clothing. And, so they'll be in charge of, we're going to have at least 4 dig sites, potentially more.
So how many of these people are coming up? How many do you need
3.
To do that? Oh, okay.
3, yeah. Yeah, and they work under Tracy Rogers, who is from the University of Toronto. She's Director of Forensic Anthropology.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and she's quite well known. She worked on the Picton case in BC. She helped find key evidence against that serial killer, Robert Picton. And she worked on the Bosma case.
Yeah, Tim Bosma.
Tim Bosma in Hamilton, yeah. So she's quite well known. And so 3 of her team are coming up. They came to the Owen Sound site too last year. Sorry, this year.
Yeah. I reached out to Tracy Rogers a couple years ago when I first started this, and how our relationship started is we would take pictures of any bones we found with measurements on every angle, send them to her, and she would email back whether they're animal or human. She could tell from the picture. What else these forensic anthropologists can do, not only can they obviously see if it's bone, they can tell right away if it's animal or human, but they can also tell when it's digging, if it's natural dirt that they're bringing up, or if it was placed there. So they'll be able to tell us. And if it's natural, if we're digging up, then we don't have to dig any further because that's been there forever and that's never been touched. So that's why it's really important to have them there, whereas we will not know that. We would just be guessing.
Yeah, we just keep on digging.
Yeah.
So it seems, last time, it was the one in Owen Sound, I think, if I'm not mistaken, where you found some items anyway that were kind of that time frame. Mm-hmm. Are you, and actually in the well as well, you also found some things from what I remember.
Yeah. We found like a shoe. That was Lisa's shoe size, and at the Owen Sound property, and we were like, holy smokes, like, this could be the smoke we're looking for, but it wasn't. We found a rolled up tarp on the property, and the forensic experts took their time going through it, and it was just discarded drywalled in the tarp at the Owen Sound property.
Yeah, and actually that tarp was under a tree, which we took down. Like, there were 2 trees on that property, which were taken down, and under that one tree, about 20 feet under that tree, was his tarp. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how does something like that get under there?
Yeah. We found a car motor.
Yeah,
the other tree.
There's a car motor. Yeah.
Yeah.
This property was a dumping site for decades.
Okay. Yeah. Well, go then.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned a shoe that was her size, because, and this just kind of leads me to wonder, is her family still around?
Yeah, her father and mother are still around. I spoke with Ken Reimer, her father, just last week. I'm just letting him know we're still doing stuff. I give him a call every now and again. I don't ever want to give her family or her friends false hope. I just want them to be confident knowing that we're not going anywhere. We're going to continue doing this. And I apologize every time I talk to Ken. Like, I'm sorry if this brings up hurts. I have no idea how you feel. I hope to never know how you feel. However, we're not going anywhere. We're going to keep going until we find her. And they are. They are receptive and happy that we're doing this.
Yeah. It's interesting because you think, would her mother have recognized that, known whether or not that was her shoe? I think people, but it's so long ago. You know, like, I could say, oh, that's my brother's shoe, or that's so-and-so's shoe. Now, 30 years from now, I'm not going to remember. So you kind of wonder anyone can identify those things.
It was just the bottom part of the shoe. So whether it was so decayed or whether it was just so, broken or whatever, then it was only the bottom part. So nobody would be able to recognize it. So we did tell the OPP that is something we did find and stuff like that. And we kind of kept everything aside in case they did want it.
So what is a cadaver dog supposed to do with materials that are as old as the ones that you're looking for? How do they work?
They can detect human scents. They're trained to smell human blood. But just because a cadaver dog shows interest in an area, it could be as simple as you know, I got a cut on my shirt. Sorry, I got a cut. I bled on my shirt, took my shirt off. I threw it on the ground. That got buried. And then a year later, you take a cadaver dog over there. A cadaver dog can get a hit on my shirt with the blood on it. So it doesn't mean that there's human remains where a cadaver dog shows interest. It just means that there's been human activity. There may be some blood or some DNA, but I mean, it does not mean that there's human remains there. So I want to be very clear about that. That even last year, when a dog showed interest in this property we're going to next week, it doesn't mean there's human remains there. It just means that there was human activity in that area. But it could be as simple as some blood on a shirt which was thrown down a well or buried or anything like that.
30 years ago, though?
Yes. It's very rare, of course, but there are cases. There's one case I read about, and it was 30 or 40 years old.
Saskatchewan?
Out in Western Canada. And a cadaver dog did find the remains of a 30, 40-year-old missing girl.
Wow.
Yeah, so it can happen. It's very rare, of course, but it can happen.
And that's exactly why we bring all these experts, right? Because now if a cadaver dog was to hit off an area we weren't going to look at, we can quickly run over that with the ground-penetrating radar. And if the ground-penetrating radar picks up something, then we can get the excavator there. We have the forensic experts on site. Like, having everybody there is going to run smoothly.
It sounds like, I mean, you've got a lot of things planned out. We should talk a bit about how people might recognize you from other cases as well. Now, you mentioned earlier, and we haven't talked about him yet, Terry Shope. You were involved in finding him.
Yeah. We were asked by friends of Terry Shope if we would help look for him. And typically, we don't pick up live cases because we're focused on cold cases, but we did have resources available and relationships that we've built with people who are in search and rescue who were willing to help. So we reached out, we set that up, we did a search in Berkeley and Holland Center for Terry, a large 30-person search, and with advanced tactical training search and rescue from Kitchener. And that didn't turn up anything, so I began to just kayak Georgian Bay because we were thinking he might have fallen in Georgian Bay. So I began to do that, and I did that every 3 days. And then we had Bill Bolton come up from Advanced Tactical Search and Rescue. We went around Georgian Bay, and it was going to be our last time going through the bay, and we located him in Georgian Bay.
So, I mean, what you do, and it seems like people have faith in what you're doing, that you're able to find, their missing loved ones. And in a couple of cases, either your website or kayaking around, basically, just doing the legwork has led you to find people who have been missing.
Yeah.
The website also helped locate Nolan Panchishan. Yeah, so it's, tips are coming in from all kinds of things. And I know that you guys do, normally cold cases, but as you've said, there are some that are more current. Now, we do have Craig on the line, so we'll go to Craig. Good morning.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering, is there a statute of limitations? Like, you mean if it was found, say, over 100 years? You mean in the States it would be different? You mean there's no statute of limitation in Canada?
No, not for murder, no.
But in the United States there is? In England?
Not for murder, no. Not in the U.S.
In 150 years, if they find something, they could still...
Yeah, it's unlikely in 150 years the suspect would be alive. So, but as long as the suspect's alive, yes, they can still prosecute.
and on that as well, there is no statute of limitations on murder, like Matt said. However, if somebody has knowledge and has had knowledge for a number of years about the case, I'm sure there are deals that could likely be worked out with Crown attorneys and OPP if you want to share the information, but you are not a suspect in the case.
Well, thanks very much for that question, Craig. And it takes kind of a different perspective in just talking about that. You know, let's say you find Lisa Moss's remains. What happens next? But right now we are going to take a break. If any of our listeners have questions or comments, something they'd like to share with Nick or Matt, give us a call, 519-376-7777. Or you can call toll-free at 1-800-265-3757. We'll be back with more Open Line on AM 560 CFOS.
The story behind the story. Back to the open line on 560 CFOS.
Welcome back to the open line. Today in studio are Matthew Knopper and Nick Oldreeve. They have a website called Please Bring Me Home, and they basically, it takes in tips about missing people who have been missing for a very long time. The one that kind of we know the most about, and the one that they're working on currently, is Lisa Moss. She has been missing for years, so it's 1988. She was 22 years old. Let's talk a little bit about her, and then maybe a little bit about some of the other people that you have on your website. There were circumstances around the party, kind of things that led you to where you are. Something involving a car. I don't know if you want to tell us a little bit about all those details for our listeners, and maybe it'll jog someone's memory.
Yeah, the known facts about the case, which have been published in the Sun-Times and other media, she was at a party in Woodford, Sunday, July 17th, got there probably about 1 a.m., between 1 and 2, and then she left there an hour or two later, and her vehicle was driven. She was with a male occupant who drove with her there and then drove with her back to his house, and she was never seen again. Her vehicle was then found about 2 kilometers north of his house, down an unmaintained road, and it had been rifled through. Her clothing and stuff was thrown everywhere. It looked like there'd been efforts to move the vehicle and get it out of that area, potentially a day or two later. Really no sign of her since then, except there was a search for her, a big public search for her 3 weeks later, early August, actually around Summerfolk weekend of 1988. That weekend, there was a big public search, and her license was found about 3 kilometers east. And that's it. Nothing else has been found after that license in 30 years.
The thing about the license, too, if I'm remembering correctly, is it seemed like it had been tossed. It was on top of tall grass.
Yeah, that's our assumption, is that it was thrown out of a moving vehicle. Whether it was done intentionally at that location, or whether it was just discovered, whoever's involved discovered it in their vehicle and thought, we need to get rid of this at that point. But yeah.
So, for people who might know something, they can go to pleasebringmehome.com and leave a secure tip, an anonymous tip there. Or there's a P.O. box, so it's P.O. box 74, N4K, 5P1 in Owen Sound. You can leave something there. They're going to have questionnaires at local businesses sometime in the future that people can fill out and just put right back in the mailbox. You don't have to do anything else with it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be stamped and addressed already. It's going to be like pubs and coffee shops in each town surrounding each of the cases we're looking at.
So let's talk about some of these other cases. The Lisa Moss case, she was went missing from Woodford. But we've got a whole bunch of other people. Mm-hmm. I'm just on your website here. I'm going to scroll over to who is missing.
So Lois Hanna went missing around the same time Lisa did, from Kincardine, Lucknow. She lived in Kincardine, but she was last seen at the Lucknow homecoming in 88. Joe Moore also went missing from Kincardine, 2013. And Neil McDougall went missing from Ayton
in
1985. We're also in the process of taking on some more cases. Specifically, Georgian Bay suspected drownings within the Owen Sound Inlet. So we've spoken with some of the family members. All so far have been receptive to us looking into that. We're looking into purchasing a open ROV Trident, it's called, and it's a piece of equipment that can go deep in the water that you can operate via remote control and has a camera, and you can search for stuff at the bottom of Georgian Bay. Maybe certain areas that haven't been able to be looked at yet. Some of these date back to 1992. That foot washed up in Meaford. We've been talking with OPP, trying to see if we can help them get in touch with the family members of these people who went missing out in Georgian Bay to obtain their DNA to see if it's a match.
So that is, that's something that we've called the OPP about every once in a while, but don't really hear anything about at all having to do with any development with that foot in Meaford. I mean, yes, presumably it was attached to a person, and if you lose your foot, you might be in a pretty bad shape. You're not necessarily going to live through something like that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting you say Georgian-based suspected drownings. Are there a lot? I mean, when do people stop looking?
Well, I don't think it's ever stopped looking. I've spoken with family members who have lost people in Georgian Bay, like where their boat's been found. They were last seen going out in their boat, but they're not in their boat. So the belief is that they've drowned. And it's never we have to stop looking. It's just that there's nowhere else we can look. The only places left to look are 200 feet deep, and what do we have in the year 1992 that can go that deep to look? So it's never an indication of won't. It's just can't.
This ROV Trident, what is it normally used for? Is it normally used to search for people?
Scuba divers use it to go around with them when they're scuba diving, looking at sharks, get underwater images and stuff like that. And we're working on, you know, getting donations so that we can do that, and then we can do the work to try and locate anything. I think it's important, and that's kind of goes back to Terry Shope. All I had to do to start off was kayak, and a lot of people go canoeing, kayaking. What we want to do is educate the public eventually with, this is what the people were seen wearing. These are their shoes. If you're ever walking along the shoreline within this area and this area, or kayaking or canoeing, and you see items on this list that look like this, call the police. Say, hey, this matches what somebody was wearing when they went missing in Georgian Bay. Something, it can be that simple. Someone could just stumble upon it.
You mentioned donations. So you guys just became a registered charity. So tell us a bit about that.
Technically not for profit. We're not a registered charity because it is different. It's different with donations and stuff like that, depending on what you get your license for. So we're a not for profit. We do accept donations specific. Like, we like going to businesses, and what we'll do is we'll put a link on our website that people can click on it and they can see what they do, and we'll share as much as we can about that business for the donations. And the donations go, go towards mileage and lodging for the experts, for example, that are coming up. It's going to go towards the envelopes that we're going to be putting out in these businesses. Hopefully, eventually, for that open ROV Trident to start looking for these individuals in Georgian Bay. And there's always ideas that we can use these donations for. It's never used for anyone on our team for any kind of gain on our own. It's only used to propel us towards locating these missing people.
So this is something that it's interesting, and you know, it's something that you could one day make a business out of. But the thing is, you guys already have other jobs.
Yeah, we both have full time jobs and families and busy lives. So that's often the ask of people is, how do you find time? Well, I don't golf. Like, some people golf 2 days a week. We do this 2 days a week. So we do it in a free time. Specifically with the Lisa Moss case, where the epicenter of all that is just 10 minutes from here. So it doesn't take us long to get in a vehicle, and we have an hour to kill in two hours, and drive out to a location. So for Lisa Moss specifically, it's we're very close to it, so we can't find an hour here or there and do some work. And with technology now, I mean, you can interview people over the phone, over text, over Facebook. So we can get a lot of information in without having to travel very far.
That's true. There are, you know, all this technology seems to make it a lot easier, just in terms of even getting tips of searching for people with this ground radar or this ROV Trident piece of equipment, and all of these things, you know, as time goes on, there's a lot more, you know, at your disposal. In terms of, now we mentioned, so you're a not-for-profit, you've got these people from the University of Toronto and forensics people, and are these people basically donating their time, pretty much? I mean, I would imagine they take time off of work or whatever they do, people from far enough away to come all the way up here.
Yeah, they're all doing it free of any fee. We offered to pay their mileage and to pay their lodging. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, we can take care of them that way. That we always will try to have enough so that we can do that. And me and Matt have paid out of pocket for stuff before, and that's okay. Ideally, it's hard to do that when we have our own families and stuff, but we are just doing what we can.
Mm-hmm. In terms of, so this is something that you've got Barry Kruselbrink who's helping you out. Now, was he the one that provided the excavators, the digger machines?
Or yes.
Yeah. So he's done things like that. And, you know, this sort of, it's a community effort and a matter of community interest, really. I mean, she's been missing for years and years. And Bayshore Broadcasting is presenting you with a donation as well. It's a sealed envelope, so I'll just give that to you. I don't know how much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're,
just to show
you.
the organization's support, the company's support for the search for Lisa Moss.
We're very grateful for that that donation, and it's going to go towards this search that, you know, fingers crossed, it's either going to locate Lisa or it's going to lead us in a different direction, and the area is just going to get smaller that we have to look for her at. So we appreciate that very much.
It's one of these things that, so we should just stick on that for one more thing in case somebody's listening and someone else wants to make a donation. Do they go to your website? What do they do if they want to donate?
Yeah, they can go to the website. They can go to our Facebook page. There's information there for a GoFundMe. There's information there for a PayPal account. They can reach out to us and they can just do an e-transfer to the business account of Please Bring Me Home. It's, you know, or they can just reach out to us for more information on how to donate. Whether that's Facebook message, send us a tip through the website if you want, and we'll read it. So it comes directly to me and Matt when tips come in. So
So we should go over these people. So there's Joe Moore, Neil McDougall, Lois Hanna, and Lisa Moss. And Lois Hanna and Lisa Moss went missing around the same time. I don't remember if I asked you this last time, but is there any connection between the two?
No. There are lots of rumors and speculation which happened around these kind of cases. There was speculation that there was a connection, that there perhaps could have been a connection to a serial killer like Paul Bonato. I really want to kill that rumor. There is no connection to Paul Bonato, and there was no direct connection to Lisa or Lois in any way. It's unfortunate that within 2 weeks, two people went missing. I mean, it's rare in this area for one person to go missing for this length of time, but to have two within 2 weeks, of course, that gets people talking and speculating, but there is no link.
Well, there you go. So that's something to keep in mind when, you know, if you're thinking about submitting a tip. Now, we have about 10 minutes left, so we will take a break. And, of course, if any of our listeners have a question or comment they would like to share with Matthew Knopper or Nick Oldreeve, give us a call, 519-376-7777, or you can call toll-free at 1-800-265-3757. You're listening to The Open Line on AM 560 CFOS.
The story behind the story. Back to The Open Line on 560 CFOS.
That's one person.
Back to The Open Line. On today's show, Matthew Knopper and Nick Oldreeve are in studio. They have a website called Please Bring Me Home, where you can submit tips having to do with people who have gone missing, a lot of them quite some time ago. Lisa Moss in 1988, Lois Hanna in the same year, but it seems Neil McDougall in 1985, but Joe Moore went missing in 2012, which, that's a while ago now. He was last seen October 31st, 2012, Joe Moore. But it seems more recent, but it definitely is, you know, quite a few years ago now. So we asked you, Nick, how you got into it, and you worked finding missing kids, you know, something that you're good at, you're passionate about it. But Matt, we didn't ask you why you got into it.
A few reasons. One was I went on a search for Lisa back in 1990. And it was through a rural location, which is actually very close to where we're actually going to be digging in 3 weeks. Oh, sorry, next week, over 3 days. So I had that connection, and I wanted to make sure that Nick knew about this area that I'd been to do a... myself and two people that I didn't know very well went on a search. So I just wanted to give that information to Nick, and he didn't know about it, so we looked at that property for a while. And then I worked for a few years as a reporter at the Sun-Times, so I stayed close to the story. Through my wife's family. People in her family knew Lisa. Her cousin knew Lisa, and people around that group. And then my father actually went missing in 2012, so the same year as Joe Moore. Nick made a comment that he doesn't know how those families feel, and I certainly do, because my father was missing. I searched for him that night. He was deceased. The police did locate him, but it's a horrific, a horrible feeling, and you don't know who to turn to outside of the police, and they do a great job. They helped locate my dad, but sometimes people aren't found for various reasons. So to have a resource like Nick, and then that was one reason which helped propel me to get in contact with Nick, was the great job that he was doing, and having gone through it with my dad being missing and having to search for him, and knowing what those families feel like, and what they're going through firsthand, I wanted to be able to do whatever I could along with Nick to try and bring some peace to these families and try and please bring these people home, which is why we've called the website that. It's just please bring me home.
It's so you also know, I mean, you know how awful it is to have somebody go missing, and you know what it feels like to have them found.
Yes.
And I would imagine, that's part of the motivation for helping
it
the
is,
families.
It is.
It does make a difference.
It does. I mean, the hurt never goes away, but it, over time, you get to place it in a different area, and you do get to move on, but it takes time. It's a horrible thing to go through, and I really feel for every family who does. But the unknown. So, if my father hadn't been found, dear God, I mean, I would still be looking. I mean, I really would. So for these families who have children, loved ones who are still missing, it's a horrible feeling, because that unknown is, where is he, where is she, what happened? So if my father hadn't been found, it would be a horrific thing to go through for all those years, and for 30 years, I can't even imagine. So my heart goes out to those people, and whatever we can do to try and help.
Well, and in some cases, that there might be somebody who murdered them, who's still out there,
mm-hmm.
Which I can imagine would also be very hard to take for a family member, for such a long time.
Yeah.
We have about 2.5 minutes left. Is there anything that you wanted to add that we haven't covered yet?
We are here to not only help the families try and locate their loved ones, but we're also here to protect the tipsters. So if you give us information, any information that could help us locate these people, we're here to help you, and we're here to protect you and do what we can to make you feel as comfortable as we can. Trust this process. We came into this because we're trying to speak to some people who may not trust the police for whatever reason they want, whether we think that's right or wrong. And if people don't trust Crime Stoppers, and for whatever reason that is, whether that's right or wrong. And if you don't trust the internet, well, we have our P.O. box.
Yeah, there are lots of resources. And,
yeah,
and there are a lot of... somebody knows something.
And I want to speak
really
to... And I want to speak to that. I can't speak to why people... don't trust the police, because everyone does for their own personal reason, but if there's anything I can say, it's just, and if you're not near the area, just go to your local police agency and just talk with them and tell them what your fear is first, and maybe they can help you.
And so that's something that, I mean, I get you're kind of working with them, or at least I would imagine sharing some information if it's pertinent to what you're doing. So, any way of kind of getting that information out will help. Now, we just have a minute left, so I just want to say, if the caller who wanted a phone number wants to call back in a minute or two, Steve can give you that. For the rest of our listeners, you can drop it off at P.O. Box 74 N4K 5P1 Owen Sound, or go to pleasebringmehome.com to secure a tip on the web, an anonymous tip. So September 5, 6, and 7, they will be continuing their search for Lisa Moss. I want to thank you very much for coming in today, Nick and Matthew.
Thanks for having us. Thank you very much.
That's all the time we have for today. Today's show and previous shows are available on our website at 560cfos.ca. Simply go to the website, click on air, then click on podcasts. The Open Line will be front and center. Previous podcasts are also available going back several months. I'm Claire McCormack, and you're listening to AM 560 CFOS.